Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And today, Wendy Wilson from Apothecary Herbs will be joining us right after the market report for Wednesday, September 2nd, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Oh, Melody.
Get ready there. You just broke my eardrums with... with your microphone.
Well, my headset fell off. I don't have my headset screwed on straight, so.
Well, tighten
these things happen.
Let that tighten.
Yeah, I understand. I'm gonna have to put some toupee glue or some headset glue on there so it sticks. Fastens to my head at all times.
There you go.
I'm gonna have to get a waterproof headset so I'll be able to use it when I take a shower.
There you go. Well, gold today doesn't need any glue. Because it didn't stick to yesterday's price. Maybe it does need some glue. Down 620 today, down 620 for gold at 1134.60. Silver, though, was up 0.08 at 1480. Platinum was up 13 at 1019. And palladium was up 12 at $589. The USDX today, of course, was stronger, 95.91. Up 0.61, and the crude oil was also up 0.63 at 46.04. Paper markets today, before we get to Wendy Wilson, they took back a little over half of their loss yesterday, 293 points, 1.82%. The NASDAQ was up 113. 2.5%, 47.49, and the S&P up 35 at 19.48, and the number on the Dow was 16,351 on the Dow, up 293. The 10-year, 2.19, up 0.02. The euro was down, of course, 1.12, and... quiet evening in the markets. I believe the China's market, the Shanghai, dropped over 4%, but it did come back and was only down very slight. Germany was down, really not a lot of change in the markets. Hong Kong was down about 1.5%. And I believe Wendy Wilson is on the line. Let's get started right away. And good afternoon, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Melody. Hello, Al. How's everybody?
Just fine.
Just fine.
Awesome.
What's got for us today?
Well, remember last week we had part one. We didn't have enough time to finish our what's in this year's flu shot. And so I thought we'd pick it up, maybe recap just a little bit, just remind listeners. Last week we learned that this year's flu vaccine has four strains. It has two A and two B flu strains in there, H1N1 bird flu, of course. They've got the Bisbane Victoria B strain. So you're looking at four viruses in this flu vaccine. It's called a quadrivalent flu. And so last week we only got to do half of it, and we were talking about that study, Al and Melody, that in 2013 there was a team of microbiologists in Bethesda, Maryland, at the Center for Biologics Evaluation and Research. And they found that animals who were vaccinated with a flu vaccine suffered more if they became infected with influenza. So the researchers stated in their research that flu vaccines do not really prevent the disease, but in theory, it should help your body produce antibodies for protection. But what the research showed was that those who got vaccinated were less healthy than those who got a placebo. So those who got the flu vaccine proved to have 5.5 times more respiratory illness. And the vaccinated group actually contracted influenza at 100%, whereas the unvaccinated did not get the flu. And the vaccinated group also had 26% more cases of the common cold, 160% more cases of various viruses, including polio, and 30% more cases of contracting some type of respiratory virus. So the group which was vaccinated had an overall increased health risk of 18.5% more than the unvaccinated group. Then there was this other study, Al and Melody, in 2014 from Canadian researchers that showed that those who got the flu shot in the 2008-2009 version, they were more likely to become infected with a pandemic virus in the flu shot compared to those who didn't get it. So the team of researchers researched this in several provinces of Canada, and the same results were materializing. So some of the jurisdictions in Canada opted not to offer the flu vaccine that year, but U.S. health authorities argued that it was just a rare Canadian issue. So if regular influenza can, on average, increase your risk of an illness by 5.5% to 18.5%, what would happen if a more deadly strain of influenza appeared in our flu vaccine in the future? Do you have any guesses, Al?
I can't imagine that it would be a good thing. And, I mean, this is really strange.
I know.
Information. I mean, this is scary information, because you can sit back and you can explain it as, well, it was an unintended consequence. But there was only benign intent. Or if you are conspiracy minded, you can sit back and say that they know these vaccines will actually contribute to illness.
Well,
and
a lot of
if
times
they know, they want you sicker.
Right. Well, what we do know is with the childhood vaccines, they have been seeding those vaccines. Not all the vaccines are the same for the childhood batches. So that's why some people that were vaccinated in the 50s and 60s wound up with cancer, because those batches got that monkey strain of cancer. So they can make different vaccines, and people just think they're all the same, but they're not. But getting to this question, the reason I'm asking it, if we could have a more deadly viral strain in the flu vaccine, is because they've been recreating the Spanish flu. And it could be very likely that it'll either be a pandemic type of a vaccination, or it may be something that they sneak in annually to the regular flu vaccine. Because, look, the bird flu was initially a vaccine just for bird flu in a pandemic, but now they're just seeding it into our annual flu vaccines. So the likelihood of this is because scientists report that they have been replicating the Spanish flu. Professor Yoshihiro Kawaka of the University of Wisconsin-Madison says his research is essential for the development of future vaccines, he says, as a pandemic countermeasure. So he has been successful at replicating the Spanish flu, and he says he minimalizes the risk that people are saying this is insanity, because he said he reaffirms researchers know what they're doing and there's more surveillance. Now, this is what Dr. Robert Coulter, professor of microbiology at Harvard School of Medicine, he says, the scientists doing this work are so immersed in their own self-aggrandizement, they have become completely blind to the irresponsibility of their acts. Their arguments in favor of such work, such as increased ability for surveillance, remain as weak as ever, end of quote. So a lot of people in the community, the microbiology, virology area of medicine and science research are really on guard. They're not with this recreating deadly flu strains like that for the purpose of inoculating people.
It's my understanding that the Spanish flu, after mm-hmm. we had millions of people die from it,
right.
basically disappeared, and in order to recreate strains, they had to dig up the graves of people, the bodies of people who had been buried a century ago whenever they had the Spanish flu epidemic. They had to be mm-hmm. dug up out of the ground in order to find enough traces of the Spanish flu to recreate it, which means it was gone from the earth,
right?
All right, at least from the surface of the earth, and they have brought it back.
I know. See how that is insanity.
Yeah.
It certainly is.
Yeah.
And they say it's for our protection. That sounds like a narcissist,
yeah.
you know? Well, you know, we could one day encounter a report that's substantiated or not, that there is Spanish flu, an outbreak, and that pharmaceutical companies now have developed this vaccine to protect us against it. Would you roll up your sleeve, Al? Would you risk your life and take that?
I don't know what I'd do, tell you the truth. I wouldn't want to be around it. I know the Spanish flu is deadly on the one hand, and I have good reason to suspect that the vaccine might be almost as deadly or maybe more so.
Really
should be done is anybody needs this, the people who invent this stuff, they ought to be the first ones to take the new vaccines.
Oh, yeah. Well, remember,
it should be a requirement.
In part,
don't work on this
right.
side, you got to take the vaccine.
You first, right?
Remember
in part one we mentioned that the CDC estimates deaths due to influenza can range from 3,000 to almost 50,000 a year. Well,
that's globally or in the United States?
That's globally.
Okay.
Yeah, that's CDC. I'm sorry, not World Health Organization. So that's just in the United States. So as we mentioned that, those estimates – those are just estimates of mortality rates. So if we check with the 2010 National Vital Statistics System for the U.S., we find an annual mortality rate for influenza to be around 500 deaths. Okay? So that's a big difference from 3,000 to almost 50,000 deaths reported by the CDC. So you can actually drive yourself kind of crazy with all the mortality statistics, because some sources state different rates. But, for instance, the standard mortality influenza rate in 1919 for flu was 2.5%. Today, we're expected to believe it's 45 to 50%. And that would mean about 150 million people die every year. And get this, the statistics now on mortality for the Spanish flu, Al, they say is comparatively low, 7%. So your regular standard flu bug, they say, is more dangerous than the Spanish flu, which I don't believe.
Well, it is for now, but after they've revived the Spanish flu out of the grave, they are. Mm. They say they're recreating it. That means they're probably a new and improved Spanish flu that's at least as lethal as the one they had in the past. And if it does break loose, they'll have a vaccine that we'll be able to pick up for how much? $100
well,
a shot? $100
well,
a shot? How much will it cost?
Well, I don't know, but what's really scary is these scientists have the ability to not only recreate, synthesize, if you will, these viruses. They have the ability to also, in with their creation, switch off parts of immune systems so that you're completely vulnerable.
I understand that.
So few
I've
sources
heard
really... I'm sorry, well, few
ago,
sources are willing...
Go ahead, excuse me.
Yeah, few sources are willing to report that, you know, what the global rates are. So you want to keep in mind that people who have died from the flu were really not cultured. You know, the bodies weren't proven to have died from the flu. It was just assumed they died from the flu. Now, in 2005, the British Medical Journal stated that U.S. flu death figures, those statistics, were more PR than actual science. So it would explain why doctors don't get the flu shot. And it would appear that Dr. Greer, when he mentioned more people are dying from, you know, not the flu, but from pneumonia and from other diseases. In other words, here's the thing. If the vital statistics is accurate, and more people, and 500 people die from true influenza, Dr. Greer is saying that more people die from heart disease, almost 600,000. More people die from cancer, almost 600,000. More people die from diabetes, almost 70,000, than you do from influenza. Actually, Al, more people seem to die from ulcers, 2,900. Hernias, 1,800. Pregnancy at childbirth, 825. So, the CDC wants to put all the respiratory infections into the influenza-associated death statistic to, you know, push the death numbers up so they can sell the vaccine, promote it, and sell it. So it makes you wonder, you know, this aggressive push for flu vaccines, you know, let's ask this. Let me ask you, Al. Do you think it's driven by greed or a deliberate attempt to depopulate with disease?
Well, I'd say the answer is, I give you Melody's standard answer when I give her questions. She says both.
All of the above?
No, I finally have an answer. Both. It's both greed and perhaps depopulation.
Yeah.
I mean, it's something that's just it's scary. It's nuts. It's insane. You look at it, and it's hard to even believe. You told us, if I understand correctly, there are four different strains of antivirus in the flu virus.
Well, that
implies to me that there's four potential strains that they think could be coming this fall and winter. And they don't know which one of the four it's going to be, but if you take this, odds are you'll get the one you need.
Right.
Who's to say there's not five or eight or ten? And my point is, I'm not sure if they don't have a vaccine that is targeted on the disease, on the particular disease we're likely to get, and I don't know if they can do that, but if they don't have it, do we really want this? This is a certain amount of Russian roulette under ideal circumstances. We're still playing Russian roulette.
Well, absolutely, and as some virologists have said, like Dr. Greer has said, you know, it's insanity. They're actually breaking federal law when they produce a vaccine within a matter of weeks. Actually, by law, they should test it over a five-year period before they use it. So, but they say, you know, with the flu vaccines changing every year, that's impossible to do. And Dr. Greer says it's also impossible to check.
Impossible to sell the product.
Yeah, so they're coming out also with a universal vaccine. I don't know if you've heard about that, where they claim they've been able to crack the viral code and it covers all known viruses. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah, that'll be real interesting. We'll take that and we'll see. Oh, God only knows what'll happen afterwards.
Right.
Why don't you give folks some contact information where they can get more insight into this problem and perhaps even some herbs that can do people some good to protect them?
Absolutely. We do have a pandemic kit that has some broad spectrum and more targeted formulas. We even have a formula in there that has an inhibitor to Ebola. So you have your options there. Actually, these kits we sell to doctors and nurses every fall because they want to keep their job. So they get vaccinated, but then they use our product to reverse the vaccine. So you can too. Just give us a call at 866-229-3663, 866-229-3663, or visit us on the web, thepowerherbs.com. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, Wendy, thank you. That's Wendy Wilson from thepowerherbs.com, 866-229-3663. Melody and I will be back on Financial Survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Does the cost and risk of conventional healthcare concern you? Wouldn't you prefer inexpensive solutions to health problems rather than disease management? If so, tune into Herb Talk Live with herbalist Wendy Wilson every Tuesday and Thursday evening, 7 p.m. on AmericanVoiceRadio.com, where your healthcare options just became endless.
I'm Alfred Adisker with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
Well, there were several reports that came out today that supposedly pushed, you know, the stock market up and possibly pushed the Feds into thinking they might increase or raise the rates come later this month when they have their meetings. You have the private survey by ADP, the payroll processor, that came out today, and they said the businesses added about 190,000 jobs last month, up from 177 in July, but below a six-month high that was set in June. And this report comes 2 days before the Friday's August jobs reports. And they're also anticipating that the unemployment rate will fall to 5.2%. So this will be the last jobs report Janet Yellen will have, the Federal Reserve policymakers will have, before, again, they meet later this month. And with those numbers, you can add also orders to U.S. factories. They posted a modest gain in July. Of course, the big news is everyone talks about the rise in motor vehicles orders in a year, a solid gain in that category. Factory orders rose 0.4% in July. Commerce Department reported today orders had increased a much larger 2.2% in June, though. So in June you had 2.2%, in July you had 0.4. But good news. Factory orders rose. That's all that matters. For July, orders for motor vehicles surged 4%, the largest jump since July of 2014.
That's in a year. Largest jump in a year.
Largest jump in a year.
It's one of those things. It's the largest jump we've had in the last 6 days. I mean, this is really something.
I know it.
It's not that big a deal. You
but
know?
Then these are still reports that have to be reported, Alfred.
I understand. But
and I agree
have
with
to be
you.
Made, but they don't have to. This idea of the largest jump.
I know, but the
largest jump in a year is not that big a deal.
These are the spins, and this is, you know, when we talk about the economy is not doing as well. Well, here you're seeing the spins, and you know that make the normal GDP, the normally, you know, the generally dumb public out there think that hey, the economy is doing better than, you know. Perhaps they are, but you know, it's all part of the illusion. It's all part of keeping the system going. But you had, but
why
just
do
like
we have to have the illusion?
Just like we mentioned, just like I just read about the factory orders rose 0.4%. Hey, it rose, but hey, in June it was 2.2%. To me, that's a big drop.
Yeah,
huge
it's
drop.
One of those things.
But again, it's just nobody pays attention to anything, Al. Again,
not too many people do. Some people pay attention, but most don't.
Most people
because they are ignorant. In part because they don't think there's much they can do about it, and so they're just putting in their time and moving from day to day and so on and hoping for the best. But we live in a world where those hopes may not be sensible. You know, you've got to do more than just hope for the best. You're going to have to try to protect yourself. And if you agree that there's a problem coming, if you don't see the problem, you don't agree, you don't disagree, say, I don't know nothing about economic problems, Ms. Scarlett. Well, you won't protect yourself, that's for sure. And that may be a serious mistake.
Another report out today about U.S. banks. Their earnings jumped for the April-June period from a year earlier. Phew, now we can all breathe a little sigh of relief for people who have money that the U.S. banks are holding. The FDIC reported the U.S. banks earned $43 billion in the second quarter. That was up. Nearly 60% of banks reported an increase of profits.
So thank goodness the banks are doing well. The rest of us might not be, but the banks are doing great. Banks are what made this country great.
You would think that if they earned $43 billion in the second quarter, that they should be able to pay a little bit greater interest on the money that people on the funds that they hold in their accounts and so forth, instead of the paltry, you know, 0.001. You know, they're making billions, but you know, hey, don't give it to the, you know, to where, you know, the they, you know, the.
We'd like to stimulate the economy, but not with our money.
That's correct.
We'll stimulate the economy with your money, but not the banker's money, Melody.
Charge-off loans were down for all major categories, which this is the part I thought was interesting, except commercial and industrial loans and auto loans. So, you know, you have charge-off loans, which is credit cards and so forth, but not auto loans. That means they're still charging off a lot of auto loans and your commercial industrial loans. So I thought that was a little interesting. Number of bank failures continue to slow, marking 18 last year. We're still above normal, though. And another little interesting report I saw, India's biggest SUV maker is looking to crack the U.S. market with an electric scooter. So, really?
I'm thinking about going into the rickshaw business.
Rickshaw, perhaps, yeah.
I'm thinking that. I think we're going to have a lot of unemployed people.
But yesterday,
learn how to make rickshaws that are cheap and approved by the Automobile Association or whoever. They have airbags, of course, and all the rickshaws.
But yesterday, I think
call them for next to nothing.
Yesterday, I think you and I talked off air about China, or maybe we did talk about it on the program about how, you know, they might be sending over their larger automobiles, their bigger sedans, but the American people don't want the bigger sedans. And we talked about, really, China? You know, with their pollution and their little areas in their cities, they have a desire for large sedans. And when I envision India, their largest SUV maker is ready to make its debut on U.S. roads, I just don't see India's population driving SUVs.
Well, that may be why they're trying to sell them in the States. I mean, they get into this when they think their economy is strong and it's going to get stronger, and now they're producing automobiles, and where are they going to dump them?
Well, yeah, I mean,
they can't sell them domestically. So,
well, certainly, I mean, China was their biggest and China was one of their biggest markets. And now that is slowed down so bad, yeah, you're right. They need to find other areas to send it to, just like China's automakers. You know, they're going to send over their large sedans to try to dump them on the American people. So, yeah, they do that. But I still, I would expect, you know, China and India to drive automobiles like Europe does. You know, your small little, you know.
Yeah, they've got, well, yeah, they do. They do. They have, you know, I mean, you watch movies and whatever, you will see more bicycles than automobiles.
Yeah, I know.
But they are profound status symbols, as they are here in the United States. And those Chinese or Indians who can afford a large sedan, they may not be able to drive it far, but they're going to impress everybody who sees it. Oh, my gosh, there's a guy in a limousine. He must be really, really wealthy. And that is, you know, regardless of the mileage, what you buy those sedans for is how many people can you impress per mile? Not what kind of mileage do you get in terms of gasoline, but how many people are significantly impressed every mile you drive those vehicles?
And another article came out. It's interesting. They spotted Chinese warships off the coast of Alaska. The U.S. military spotted about 5 Chinese Navy ships off the coast of Alaska in the Bering Sea, heading in the direction of the Aleutian Islands. And the presence of these Chinese ships, including 3 combat ships, a replenishment vessel, marks the first time that the U.S. military has reported seeing any such activity in the area. And this was reported by the Wall Street Journal. And officials, the U.S. military doesn't believe that it's anything threatening. But it's been suggested that perhaps this ship's presence could be due to China's growing interest in using the Northern Sea route to transport goods. So I thought it was kind of interesting.
Do you think when they say using the Northern Sea Route, are they talking about the Northern Sea Route around Eurasia, or are they talking Northern Sea Route along the north of Canada?
Well, between the Northern Sea Route to transport goods between Asia and the West, it can take up to several days. It can be up to several days faster than using the Suez Canal route.
And they're talking about going on the north side of Russia.
Yeah.
Going around Europe they're going on the north side of Russia and Eurasia.
To
reach Europe. That's the intent. No, I agree.
That's interesting.
They're not going to be moving north of Canada, or at least that's the implication.
No.
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 Mm-hmm.
No. Interesting, though.
Yep.
So now you can see Russia from your backyard in Alaska, and you can see Chinese ships, warships.
Yep.
Why would they take warships, though? I mean, you'd think you would have...
You know how those Alaskans are.
Well, no, you think, why would the Chinese...
There's a lot of pirates up there in Alaska. Yeah. They're like, they just send a conventional ship, the Alaskan pirates. They might grab the ship, Melody.
I mean, why wouldn't you just take some sort of cargo ship, and that's what you're going to be taking up there anyway?
I think you should take a Carnival cruise liner. That's what I think. I mean, if you're going to make these trips, you might as well enjoy yourselves, you know? It's warships, a Chinese warship. That's got to be pretty dull. Carnival cruise liners, that's what we need.
What's next now?
I don't know. I've got one here from Brazil keeps interest rates at 14.25%. This is from AFP, which is the French news service. Brazil's central bank is expected to maintain its key interest rate at 14.25% this Wednesday after 7 consecutive hikes, aiming at holding back soaring inflation. All right? Brazil has soaring inflation, therefore they're raising the interest rate. They're at 14.25%. We're at 0.25%. We're trying to cause inflation and not succeeding. Brazil at 14.25% is trying to stop inflation, and they're not succeeding. The reason I bring this to people's attention, for one thing, Brazil has got 14% more in higher interest rate than we do here in the United States, at least set by the banks. Brazil hasn't died yet. All right? How is it that we can have such the – what's the big trauma about raising interest rates in this country from a quarter of a percent to a half a percent or even 1%? And there may be legitimate expense. There may be legitimate excuses for concern there. But somebody needs to talk about them. And the only one that I see that may be significant is if our interest rate was raised from a quarter of a percent to half a percent, it would imply that some or all of the debt, the national debt, the interest on the national debt would double. Now, it's not a question of going from a quarter of a percent to half a percent by itself is not a big deal, but doubling is. If you doubled the interest rate on the national debt, I don't have the numbers in front of me on what that interest is per year right now, but we are at a point where we can't easily afford, the government can't easily afford to see the interest paid on the national debt double. And it may be one of the primary reasons why we sit back and say, oh my gosh, we've got to hold it at near zero interest rates. That may be the reason for it. But what's interesting, the second thing that's interesting to me about this is that we talked about the white paper that was released by the St. Louis Federal Reserve a little over a week ago. And in that white paper, Vice President at the St. Louis Federal Reserve, Mr. Williams, if I recall, it Williams or Williamson, I don't remember clearly. But it was his contention that quantitative easing didn't work, point one, which it was intended to stimulate the economy by generating inflation. It failed to generate any significant inflation. He contends that quantitative easing 1, 2, and 3 were a waste of time and money, largely didn't accomplish their objectives. And the second thing he contends is that holding interest rates down to near zero, all right, a quarter percent, he says, in fact, the idea was that was supposed to get more people to borrow, and then they'd go deeper into debt, and we'd have more debt instruments created, and it would stimulate the economy. He says, no. When you lower interest rates, it actually contributes to lower inflation, which the Fed seems to believe is the solution to the languid economy. They go, okay, if we could just get the inflation higher, then the economy would pick up. Now, here we have Brazil. They have 14.25% interest rates, and they have a high, high inflation rate. And at the same time, we have the United States, which has a quarter of a percent interest rate, and we have very low inflation rate, or perhaps even evidence of deflation. Now, these two facts are consistent with the theory that was advanced in that St. Louis white paper, St. Louis Federal Reserve white paper. He said, look, you lower the interest rates down near zero, you're going to have low inflation or even deflation. And the implication is if you want inflation, you've got to raise the interest rates. And the Brazilians have high interest rates, and they also have high inflation rates. The question is, which comes first, the chicken or the egg? Do high interest rates cause high inflation? Or do high inflation rates cause high interest rates? But there's at least a correlation. When you have high interest rates, you also have high inflation rates. And when you have low interest rates, you have low inflation rate and or deflationary rates. And the strong implication then is that, look, if you want to get this economy going, the Federal Reserve can't pussyfoot around with a quarter of a percent rise in the interest rate from quarter of a percent to half a percent. They really need to jack it up some. Kick it up to, you know, kick it up, who knows, 50 percentage points. Bring from a quarter percent to three quarter of a percent, maybe even 1%, maybe 1.5%. Everyone would initially scream, "It's oh my gosh, the world is coming to an end," but maybe it wouldn't come to an end. Maybe higher interest rates would contribute to higher inflation rates, which, according to the Federal Reserve and others, they believe are necessary to stimulate the economy. In all of this, you know, it is a puzzlement. As the King of Siam told Anna, it is a puzzlement. But it's more evidence that I don't think anybody knows for sure what's going on in the economic system. we have a certain amount of theory that's out there, and people can talk about it, but there is evidence at times that they are either intentionally misleading us, and they want an economic collapse, they want deflation, they want a depression, or they don't know what they're doing.
I think they react when they need to react. I mean, you could even say that if they raised rates a quarter point and a half a point, I mean, people who were on the fence, you know, buying houses or cars or whatever, they'd go out before it went any higher. Don't know if that would be enough to really make any difference in the economy and so forth. You might have some sort of a knee-jerk reaction. But the problem with Brazil and the problem with everything else in the world, it's all debt. Mm-hmm. And Brazil has billions and billions of dollar-denominated debt. And, you know, if that rate goes, I mean, they can't afford it. And the thing of it is, I mean, you know, they're going to have to default on those loans. They're going to have to default if that rate, you
so
know,
are we.
So.
Everybody's going to have to. There's way too much debt. We can
I don't
have to
think,
pay the debt.
I don't think the reason that their rates are high is beneficial to Brazil. I think it's disaster, and it's going to equal, and the same thing will happen here. We can't afford to have higher rates because you're right. I mean, they can't afford it, and we got the debt that we can't pay for. So, yeah. I mean, we're all in the same boat. Every country in this world that had a fiat currency has too much debt that they can't pay back.
So what
and
are we going to do?
They dicker, and they make the Federal Reserves, the central banks of the world, they do what's needed to do at that point in time.
As much, but what is needed to do and what can they do other than kick the can down the road and buy a little more time and postpone the inevitable? We'll talk about what needs
it's
to be done
the
about
economy.
The debt.
It's
what
not
needs
the economy.
To be done about the debt, and we'll talk about it after we get back from some commercials. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Job stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We were talking about the debt and pointing out that the world is overly indebted. The debt is too great to ever be repaid. For example, here in the United States, it's probably the worst of any single country in the world. Technically, on a percentage basis, where I believe we're worse off than Greece. But the federal government says the official national debt's $18 trillion. That translates out into about $50,000 to $55,000 per person. Family four is in debt for over $200,000. If the national debt is $18 trillion, excuse me, that's your fair share of family four, a little over $200,000. If the John Williams says it's $100 trillion, that's going to double. That's going to increase your debt by a factor of five. Now you're up to $250,000 per person. If the debt is over $200 trillion, which is what's claimed by the Congressional Budget Office and also economist John Kotlikoff, if they're right and it's over $200 trillion, we're talking over $600,000 in debt for every man, woman, and child in the country. That can't be paid. It isn't going to happen, right? So from that perspective, if the world is overly indebted, we certainly are, and most of the world is following our example, and the debt can't be paid, and the higher interest rates will break the government's capacity to spend, because the higher interest rates will increase the interest on the national debt or whatever, the debt of China or wherever, then we see global forces that are pushing us toward lower interest rates in order to save the government and the debt. Or somebody's got to just come out and say, that's it, we canceled the debt. Sorry about that. What do you think they're going to do, Melody? How long can they sustain near zero interest rates in order to minimize the interest rate on the debt, the interest, the magnitude of the interest on the debt? How long can they continue that? And is there going to be a point where they finally just have to say, look, we can't make it. We can't pay the interest. We can't pay the debt. We're going to have a global reset where we wipe out some or all of the national debt, the sovereign debt of every nation on earth. Is that likely? Melody, do you think that's likely, or do you think that's irrational? What do you think about it?
No, it's not irrational. I mean, we know there's, as your favorite saying, there's too much debt that, you know, it can't be paid everywhere. And I don't think, I think the big picture is all about keeping the picture together. And it doesn't have anything to do with our economies. It doesn't have anything to do with you and me. It doesn't have anything to do with that's not their, I don't believe that that's their concern. Their concern is to keep Wall Street going, and I guess to some degree, you know, people's retirements and so forth. But I think it's all about Wall Street. It's about the multinational corporations. It's about the banks. It's about, and they
it's
will
about
do.
The government.
It's about the governments worldwide. I mean, it's about all of them. It's all the big picture, not just the politicians, not just the government, but the whole system worldwide. If you believe in a one world order, in order to globalize in a way to complete their agenda. Doesn't have anything to do with our economies. That's just, that's just what they use in order to complete what they need to. It's not like it was 20 years ago or 30 years ago. I mean, they had their agenda then. It's just they were able to use our economies to get to where we are today. Today, they could, they don't care if people lose their hard-earned money. They don't care if people have jobs. I mean, they create situations so people go around and shoot one another and so forth. I mean, they've divided, not just in this country, but everywhere in the world. And they're stirring it up. It's not done by, it just happens. I believe they create it. And they manipulate in so many ways, not just the stock markets and so forth. So I think if you really look at the big picture, it's not about our economies. I mean, we report the numbers, they report the numbers, the government numbers and so forth. But if you believe in illusions, and if you believe in a spiritual battle, and if you believe in the New World Order and everything that has to be done to get to that point, we're here. And, you know, whether they raise rates or not, it's in order to, you know, hey, keep it together a little bit longer, maybe to please, you know, something in some manner.
Well, here's the problem, and what I'm beginning to understand is this interest rate is critical from this perspective. If they raise the interest rate, they raise the amount of money we're paying on the national debt, which is considerable, all right? And the higher they raise the interest rate, the more money the government's going to have to pay on the national debt. Now, if they don't raise the interest rate, where are they going to borrow the money? I don't think the Federal Reserve can supply it anymore. It's already been the national debt, or the government treasuries have already been significantly rejected by people who would otherwise lend money and to purchase U.S. bonds. And they're saying, look, this thing is crazy. I'm not lending any more money. And so the government said, all right, we'll get the Federal Reserve to do it. All right? And they'll give us a deal on it because they have to. But where I'm trying to go with this is the debt is now so large that the interest rates become critical. If your country is overly indebted and the interest rates go up, then the government's ability to pay that national debt is going to be dramatically diminished. It may be enough to cause some sort of a bankruptcy, a collapse, whatever. On the other hand, if you don't raise interest rates, how are you going to attract capital? Right? I don't want to lend money to the government for 25 for a quarter of a percent. Nobody in their right mind wants to lend money at that rate. Right? Oh boy, I'm getting a whole quarter of a cent or 1% or 2%. It isn't enough. You're giving your money away, and it's going to continue, which means you are going to drive capital out of the country to look for a place where they pay higher interest rates. And you
can
make
already
reasonable
done
return.
That.
I understand that, but nevertheless, they are caught now. They have finally put themselves in a corner where the debt is so big and the interest rate is so small, they can't raise the interest rate. If they do, the interest on the debt becomes unpayable. They can't. If they continue with the low interest rate, they're going to lose capital. The money supply is going to shrink. We're going to go into deflation, which will be a hallmark of economic depression. And so we're seeing a constellation here of debt and interest rates and whether lenders want to continue to lend for money, for nothing, excuse me. And this is maybe going to be the constellation that's going to push this thing over the edge, where somebody's got to finally say, look, we're done, we can't pay the debt.
They are between the rock and the hard place.
That's right.
And, you know, they're darned if they do and darned if they don't.
That's exactly right.
But the whole point is they will do either or whatever benefits them.
Oh, I agree with that.
As long as they can, and if they're not ready for it to, you know. And so, I mean, the debate on whether they will or whether they won't is the same as, you know, when we report numbers, it's just a bunch of lies and so forth. What does it matter? You know, because they will do what is necessary.
They will do what's necessary.
They will do,
and I think they
what
are
benefits
rocking,
them.
Rock in the heart. If they can produce a benefit, I agree with you. But I'm not sure there's anything they can do that will really benefit them. If they raise interest rates to draw capital in so the government can borrow money, and yet at the same time it creates an obligation on the debt that's so large that they can't afford to pay. Either way they go, they are screwed in this situation. And they may be able to hold it together for another year or three, or I don't know how long they can hold it together, but it could fold up at any time. One way or another, they've got to get away from that massive debt, because if they can't do that, they can't charge interest rates that are high enough to attract more capital to be loaned to the federal government. So they got to get rid of that debt if they want to raise interest rates. That's the implication. They raise them substantially, and it's coming to a point here where you can, from that perspective, you can see that we are reaching, you know, it's like one of those graphs, one of the charts for the stock market, where you can see there's a trend line going up and a trend line going down, and they're coming to a point where they're going to meet. Well, we're kind of at that point. We're getting to a point where some of the difficult and painful forces that have been afflicting this economy for some time, they're going to meet. And when they do, it's a little of the immovable object and the irresistible force. What's going to happen? We're going to find out that the irresistible is not so irresistible, or the immovable is actually quite mobile. Something's going to change, and dramatically, and not necessarily so long from now. But it will adversely affect almost everyone, because if the only way they can get out from this, under this debt, so they can raise interest rates, so they can go into more debt, borrow more money, if the only way they is repudiate that debt or inflation, one of the two, when that debt gets repudiated, everybody's holding a U.S. Treasury is going to suddenly find out that's nothing but a piece of paper with a signature on it that has no significant value. I think they'll be lucky to get 10 cents on the dollar for them before this is done, although it might be several years before that's going to happen, but it wasn't necessarily true. It's necessarily going to be several years. We don't know. You wipe out the debt, you wipe out the correlative paper debt assets that people are treating as if and regarding, here, I'm a wealthy guy, I got a piece of paper with somebody's signature on it. They promised they were going to pay, but they can't, so they won't. You know, it's another one of these reasons we come back to it on this program on a regular basis. If you're holding on to paper debt instruments, you are taking a serious risk with whatever wealth you've put into that instrument. Time is coming. Don't know when, but the time has to come when the paper instruments are repudiated by 80-90%, in my opinion. And when it happens, people are going to be screaming. And, I mean, it'll be chaos. Mm-hmm. It'll be chaos. It'll be dangerous. And it won't be fun for anybody. Nobody's going to sit back and say, boy, yay, is this ever fun? It won't be fun. We're about out of time. I want to thank all of you for listening. I'm Alfred Adask here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. There never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.
In my dreams, I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all. I'd fool around and have a ball.
Money, money, money. Money in a rich man's world. Money, 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 always sunny.